In a new biography of the best-selling writer and Nobel laureate Pearl S. Buck, the author, Hilary Sperling, quotes a recent New York Times article on Buck that says, quote, "In China, Buck is admired but not read, and in America, she's read but not admired," unquote. Sperling is out to change that estimation of Buck. Here's book critic Maureen Corrigan's review of Pearl Buck in China.
Ever since her 1931 blockbuster, The Good Earth, earned her a Pulitzer Prize and eventually the first Nobel Prize for Literature ever awarded to an American woman, Pearl S. Buck's reputation has made a strange, slow migration. These days, it's her life story rather than her novels, which are now barely read either in the West or in China, that's come to fascinate readers. The big shift was set in motion almost 15 years ago, when literary scholar Peter Kahn lifted Buck out of mid-cult obscurity in his monumental biography called simply Pearl S. Buck, A Cultural Biography. Now, award-winning biographer Hilary Sperling has made a case for a reappraisal of Buck's fiction as well as her life. Sperling claims that Buck had a magic power, possessed by all truly phenomenal best-selling authors, to tap directly into currents of memory and dream secreted deep within the popular imagination. Sperling's book is called Pearl Buck in China, and after reading it, I've been motivated to dust off my junior high copy of The Good Earth and move it to the top of my must-read-again-someday pile. Following Kahn's lead, Sperling further succeeds in making Buck herself a compelling figure, transforming her from dreary lady author into woman warrior. Sperling's biography focuses almost exclusively on Buck's Chinese childhood as the daughter of zealous Christian missionaries and young adulthood as the unhappy wife of an agricultural reformer based in an outlying area around Shanghai. Buck was born Pearl Comfort Seidenstricker in 1892, and from her earliest days was much more than a cultural tourist. She roamed freely around the Chinese countryside, where she would often come upon the remains of abandoned baby girls left for the village dogs, and she would bury them. Buck's first language was everyday Chinese, and she grew up listening to village gossip and reading Chinese popular novels like The Dream of the Red Chamber, which were considered sensational by intellectuals, as her own later novels would be. Buck's father, Absalom, was often away, traveling over his mission field, an area as big as Texas, preaching blood and thunder sermons to often hostile Chinese passersby. After the first 10 years he had spent in China, Sperling tells us, Absalom had made, by his own reckoning, 10 converts. The young Buck and her family lived at subsistence level in houses that were little more than shacks, and apartments on streets thronged with bars and bordellos. They managed to survive the Boxer Rebellion and the subsequent violence that heralded the advance of the Chinese nationalists. By the time she arrived as a charity student at Randolph Macon Women's College in Virginia, Buck was indelibly alienated from her American counterparts. "Girls came in groups to stare at me," wrote Buck, remembering her first harsh college days some 50 years later. She was set apart not only by her out-of-date clothes made by a Chinese tailor, but by her extraordinary life experiences, which encompassed firsthand knowledge of war, infanticide, and sexual slavery. As Sperling deftly illustrates, that alienation gave Buck her stance as a writer, gracing her with the outsider vision needed to interpret one world to another. Buck's unconventional childhood also seems to have made her resistant to groupthink. In midlife, as a famous novelist, she made enemies criticizing the racism of the mission movement. She also shocked contemporaries by writing in her memoir, The Child Who Never Grew, about her brain-damaged daughter, Carol, at a time when such children were quietly institutionalized and publicly forgotten. Sperling quotes liberally from some of Buck's forgotten domestic novels, which defied the mores of her time by depicting sexual despair and revulsion within marriage. And finally, she earned herself no points with China's new leaders when she likened the zealotry of communism to that of her father and his missionary colleagues. Writing in 1954 about an encounter with a breathless Chinese communist woman, Buck said, and in her words too, I caught the old stink of condescension. Pearl Buck in China similarly rescues Buck and some of her best books from the stink of literary condescension and replaces that knee-jerk critical response with curiosity.
Maureen Carrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Pearl Buck in China, Journey to the Good Earth by Hilary Sperling.